Well, you remember last week I talked about the threat of the collector accustoms to... San Francisco literature, a way in which he had confiscated the book of Gil Arlovitz and an issue of the Miscellaneous Man, and now, as you may have seen in the papers, Collector of Customs Chester McPhee continued his campaign yesterday to keep what he considers obscene literature away from the children of the Bay Area, says the Chronicle. He confiscated 520 copies of a paper-bound volume of poetry entitled Howl and Other Poems by Allen Ginsberg with an introduction by William Carlos Williams. The words and the sense of the writing is obscene, McPhee declared. You wouldn't want your children to come across it. The books were being shipped from a London printer to the City Lights Pocket Bookshop at 261 Columbus Avenue. Lawrence Ferlinghetti, bookstore proprietor, said there were four-letter words in the poems, but it is easily defendable as a work of art. The first printing was admitted to the U.S. and sold out. Well, you remember that I have said off and on through this whole program and in articles I've written in magazines, that although the San Francisco Public Library has every piece of toilet paper used throughout the last 30 years of the life of George Sterling, each one countersigned by the chancellor of the Bohemian Club, as well as Herbert Mortimer Fleischacker, they do not have all of the works of Steinbeck or Saroyan, let alone myself. And they have none of the younger writers of the Bay Area, none whatever. And that this is usually laid to the foot of the Catholic Church, or at least the Archdiocese of San Francisco, the Archbishop. In case you don't know, the Archdiocese of San Francisco is considered to be the most illiterate and generally uncivilized Archdiocese of the Roman Catholic Church in America. And it is the last stand of the Moriarty hop, skip, and jump low mass and the Gounod high mass in a country which is deep in a liturgical revival of reverence and congregation participation. I bring up this, special aspect of the thing because there is no question but what the cultural prejudice says of the most benighted sections of the Catholic Church, which are, of course, the shame of all civilized people from the Pope down in the Church. The pressures of this barbarous section operate very strongly in San Francisco, much as they do in Quebec or Boston, where you have similar semi-savage populations which feed this, the habitants. As you know, there was a great struggle waged on the part of the church to prevent mixed bathing in the beaches of the St. Lawrence River, and they actually got laws to this effect passed, and then were forced to back down. And you all know about Boston, where it is not Puritanism, but the Irish and Polish and Italian Puritan Catholics who are responsible for the benighted condition of Boston and all this stuff that gets in the papers. Well, San Francisco, of course, for a great many years, was a laissez-faire town, And the Archdiocese had a European attitude toward a great many things. As you probably know, what is called vice in America, that is gambling and prostitution primarily, and racing, in most civilized countries are civil service occupations. I mean, in Italy, not only a racetrack or a casino, but a brothel is staffed with people who are essentially civil service workers. Now, of course, I don't say that the Pope openly condones this, but since he has been in the position of central power in Italy for some 1,500 years, 2,000 years, according to his own story, it's obvious he could have done something about it if he wanted to. In America, and especially as emanating from Ireland, there has grown up a kind of ultra-Protestantism, ultra-Puritanism, which is characteristic of the church, and which is fed also by absolute ignorance. And that ignorance, of course, is fostered and developed by a low level of parochial schools and colleges. Anyone who has ever been to Fordham or even Loyola in Chicago would be horrified at USF. Unbelievable. I mean, after all, there are plenty of learned people in the church. There are plenty of liberal and tolerant people in the church. And there are plenty of civilized people. But it seems that they do not live in San Francisco or its environs. Now, this is one big factor in the cultural night which has long since shut down over official San Francisco, at the same time, of course, that there has been a tremendous upsurge culturally in the city on the part of non-native sons, shall we say, and people not subject to this control or caught in this particular pattern. Again, let me point out that Nelson Algren's A Walk on the Wild Side is considered obscene by the librarian and is not in the San Francisco Public Library, but neither are any Catholic scholarly journals of importance, and neither are the complete works, in English, the Dominican edition, of St. Thomas Aquinas. In fact, there are none of the Dominican edition. The only St. Thomas Aquinas they have is the very bad, edited, and theologically prejudiced, so to speak, and Bowdlerized, Random House, Lifetime Library. Well, this is one factor. Another factor is apparently the guilt of the rich. At one time, the wealthy families of San Francisco were active patrons of local culture and active associates of the leading writers and artists of the city. That is, people went out to dinner, as they say. Well, the only person I have heard of any local fame in a great many years to ever have dinner at any of these people's homes is Darius Milhaud, who writes about it in his book. I don't know of anybody else. I don't... I'm not asking to be invited out for a lot of bad cooking. And the point that I'm making is that these people are no longer socially welcome. I mean, their physical presence is not desired. And this is not because years ago people were radicals, I mean weren't radicals, were conservatives, and today they are. The opposite, rather, is true. George Sterling was a sort of left-wing socialist anarchist. He was primarily a drunk and more or less an idiot. But politically, this is what he was. Jack London, of course, was a left-wing socialist. Had he lived, he undoubtedly would have been a Stalinist, like Jack Reed, whom he greatly resembled in appearance and writing and everything else. Ah, Jimmy Hopper was a socialist, I believe, and so on down the line. Now, these people were all big figures in the early days of the Bohemian Club, along with a lot of artists who were also socialists and anarchists. As are almost all American intellectuals of any importance at any time. This is what the Bohemian Club was founded for. Well, today the artist members of the Bohemian Club are high school drama teachers. The Bohemian Club has a whole set of a whole bunch of artists and, you know, writers and so forth, memberships, most of which have never not been taken up anymore. People have not been elected to them. They carry very considerable privileges, and of course they don't cost anything, as they do the rich. While the Bohemian Club is just a bunch of stuffed shirts today, I believe Chester McPhee belongs to it. Literary critic. I don't know that the critics of my colleagues on the papers here belong to it. I would rather doubt it. Jackson did. I don't know that he ever went over there anymore than he could avoid. Now, Californiana buffs like Oscar Lewis, of course, belong to it. You see, what these people want is not modern significant poetry. They want the sort of stuff that the so-called leading printer of San Francisco prints, a sort of a bad imitation of the Roycrofters, Elbert Hubbard, these outfits print exact facsimiles of the first train to run between the railroad to run between Hangtown and Michigan Bluff, or the New Year's Eve menu of the Placerville Arms Hotel in 1852. This is what they want. They don't want anything else. This is still the official culture of San Francisco. Well, this is so dirty, this Californiana stuff, that when a decent and honest man like Bill Hogan, whom I don't think comes from out here, talks about it in a perfectly ingenuous fashion. Just recently in his column, he had some stuff about the names of the motherlode towns. And Bill was not, there wasn't anything wrong with Bill, what Bill was saying. He was saying these towns, a list of these towns, are very poetry themselves. Well, of course they are. But if you know what this means culturally in the life of San Francisco, it makes the hackles along your back rise just to see the word Californiana. Because it is a symbol not just of cultural suppression, but of culture hate. I mean, these people hate anything living. I'll bet that Chester McPhee, who I imagine reads only with difficulty, he probably reads aloud and lets his finger run along the line of the page, but I nevertheless bet that he has a complete collection of rare California and a Nash and Grabhorn items. Again, let me explain that I don't mean that Bill Hogan is part of this. He certainly is not. I think it's significant that both Luther Nichols and Bill Hogan continuously talk about what is going on locally, about local writers, local poets, artists, so forth. These all get plenty. Frankenstein writes about it. He doesn't write much about anything else. And it doesn't register. It doesn't register. It does not in an iota advance what is usually called cultural cohesion of the city. Now, I think this is due, as I say, to the guilt of the culture leaders, so-called. You see, what is called society, in capital letters, usually feels that it has a certain cultural responsibility. In California, no. I mean, all its responsibility is badminton. The reason is that not that somebody is going to suddenly say Soviet partout or use four-letter words. I mean, nobody is better at using four-letter words than these chromium-plated women who hang around the Matador, society girls of the city, or have sodies after the theater and Blums.
These people are real experts at four-letter words and dirty talk generally. That's not what they're afraid of. It's just that they don't know. They wouldn't know what anybody was talking about at all. Not at all. And this terrorizes them. Then the older generation, the people of my age and older, were played for suckers by the Communist Party. I wonder if any of my readers has a list of the sponsors of the dinner in the St. Francis Hotel given to float the AYD, American Youth for Democracy, the old Stalinist Front youth organization. The poop that they put out on this had a masthead and a long list of sponsors. Well, go back and read that. It's most of the social leaders of San Francisco. Well, you see, these people were badly burned, and they don't want to meet people like me, we'll say, or Bill Saroyan at dinner. After all, we knew them when we only had one red kimono between us, and it come off red all over us. That's another factor. But primarily, I think, is that as the years have gone by, San Francisco has emerged as one of the cultural capitals of the world. The official San Francisco, which once was that, has steadily declined until it is a backward, illiterate, ignorant, and bigoted city, full of people who are fundamentally vicious, whose minds are obscene. I mean, only a man with an extremely dirty mind could imagine that a book like Allen Ginsberg's Howl was obscene. Of course, the reason he imagines it is that what a poem Howl says is, you are obscene. Look, you are violent. You are vicious. You are depraved. You are psychopathic. And you want to dump this stuff on my generation, just like you'd want to dump napalm and atom bombs. And, chum, we don't want it. We ain't taking it. You take it. Here's your hot potato back. In the specific case of Ginsberg's book, this book was welcomed all over the United States, every magazine, newspaper that reviewed it, as the first breath of fresh air in American poetry in almost a generation. And it's a book of incomparable power. It is certainly the most important book of poetry published in 1956. And this is the way that official San Francisco welcomes it. Now, I hope that everybody who listens to this and has any feeling for cultural life of the city will write to Collector of Customs Chester McPhee, the Customs House, San Francisco, and complain about this. I hope someday we can get the jobs of these people. I hope someday we have civilized, I don't mean we personally, but we can get them out of their jobs, that we have civilized people in such places as the city librarian and on the art commission, on the library commission, recreation commission, and in the customs house, and so forth. At the present time, we certainly do not. We have dangerous and subversive people. This is real cultural subversion. The picture of local culture represented by the contents of not just the San Francisco Library. Why should I keep abusing them? I mean, they're so much worse. But it's also true of the Oakland Library, it's true of the Berkeley Library, and it is true of the University of California Library in Berkeley. The only person who makes any attempt to keep up with the developments of California culture, and that includes San Francisco, is the University of California Library in Los Angeles. This is due to the fact that it's run by Lawrence Clark Powell, who has read a book or two.
certainly not cannot be said of anybody up here. Now, this is a fundamental responsibility of a library to document this stuff and to have all of it, every bit, no matter how bad. And not one of these libraries has any of it. And as I always like to tell you, this includes several Catholics, one of them a monk. Well, that,